Our high school guidance counselor used to ask us what you would do if you had $1 million, didn't have to work. And then invariably, whatever you'd say, that was supposed to be your career. So if you wanted to fix old cars, then you're supposed to be an auto mechanic.
So what did you say?
I never had an answer. I guess that's why I'm working at Inatech.
No, you're working at Inatech because that question is bullshit to begin with. If everyone listened to her, there'd be no janitors because no one would clean up if they had $1 million.
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
I'm talking about millions of dollars.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
We're living in a material world and I am a material girl. Or boy.
Well, what about you now? What would you do?
Besides two chicks at the same time?
Well, yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing, huh?
I would relax. I would sit on my ass all day. I would do nothing.
Well, you don't need $1 million to do nothing, man. Take a look at my cousin. He's broke, don't do
If I had $1 million. If I had
He's broke, you don't do yet. Whatever. His cousin. Sort of like our man Thomas. We got guys like that.
Millionaire?
Millionaires, yeah. S&P futures up 270. Down. We've been up 4 days in a row. Dow futures down 42. NASDAQ futures down 375. And as we somewhat suspected, oh, Brendan Kernan with us this morning.
Good morning.
As we somewhat suspected, as it was kind of hinted about, I think the Boeing board must have met on, did they meet on Sunday and then again yesterday or something? They must have, I mean, because now they're talking about suspending 737 MAX production in January.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're going to shut down the line.
For those that sort of don't know the story here, is they had reached, I'm going to say 50 planes a month. Something like that.
Yeah.
52 maybe?
57 down to 42.
Well, then they went down to 40 or 42, but still been pumping them out, and you'll see aerial shots of these things parked all over the place.
A couple hundred of them just sitting down.
Well, it's been 40 a month for 8 months. So.
Yeah, it's 400 or 500 of them are sitting on
And not to mention all the ones that were delivered are all sitting someplace, too.
Mm-hmm.
And I was reading someplace, Brendan, if you wanted a decent job, all you had to do was essentially call Boeing and find out where they were parked and drive out there and get a motel room for the... And they take a certain amount of maintenance per day. I mean, if it's hot, you got to open the doors. If it's, you got to do stuff. You can't just let them sit there. I mean, I don't know what else, but you probably have to, open doors and stuff to make sure there's some hours per day that you need to spend on every one of the planes. You probably got to go down and open the cargo hold and close it. You know, that kind of stuff, to make sure everything still works. And I don't know if you have to, fire up the power once in a while. I mean, I have no idea, but evidently they train you. And then when they are approved for the air, it's like 100 or 200 hours like a plane to get the thing up and running and make sure you can't just like start the thing up and fly it. I mean, there's massive procedures for getting all these systems started up again. It's a big deal. But now, we were trying to speculate yesterday with John Flanagan on if the entire supply, it's not, and Boeing's got more money than God. I mean, the government will, despite what Trump says, I mean, they will feed those guys. Would they give them how many $1 billion for refurbishing B-52s? That's just money in the bank. They can do that whenever they want. And I'm sure there's some kind of schedule, but what do you do if you're Brennan's seat manufacturer, Matty Weber's, landing gear manufacturer? Do you lay all your people off too?
Well, that's a big concern. They do think that there's going to be a lot of layoffs, even though Boeing said they're going to just reassign people temporarily to work on other flights and other factories. The supply chain is going to be hit pretty hard.
Well, I mean, and Boeing might be able to move people around, but they're not the issue. Plus, what if the other guys like just lose their guys? I mean, I had a very small piece of this. I said this 100 times. I went through this in Amtrak, Boeing, and for the Amtrak cars. I went through this at Pullman on the Amtrak cars. And when you put your there are certain people you can't shut off,
right.
Like if people are making, say, the trucks.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Boeing is a lot better shape than Pullman was in one sense, and that the people that are going to be making the landing gears for the 737, if Boeing doesn't make them, are going to be doing it for the next 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like a railroad car where we're going to build 284 of them, and then that's it.
Mm-hmm.
So you get your stuff together, your approved design on these trucks, you get all your parts, and you have your people there to do it. those people are only going to work for a couple of years. And then if then you don't get another job, they're all laid off. So if in a start and stop business like rail car manufacturing, it actually can be worse. Where, you know,
but there's going to be a significant hit to the economy if Boeing shuts this down, because there are people in the supply chain who can't afford to keep all of their workers, and some of those workers are very specialized. They may have to either retrain for another career, or instead of making plane parts, they make truck parts, but not for the same manufacturer.
Well, that's my point. But if it's a run of 560 trucks, because there's two in a car, once those are done, if they don't get a new job, those guys are kind of gone anyway.
Right.
So I won't use the term temporary hires, but you get your welders together, you get your people trained to do that job. Where at least Boeing, if you get laid off for 2 months, you know this. You hope that the same people are going to be making seats and landing gear and so forth for the next 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
So you're probably not going to go get another job. But if you were to...
If that goes from 2 months to 6 months or 8 months...
Yes. I'm saying initially it shouldn't be as much of a problem as the Pullman situation was, because this is a long-term thing.
Mm-hmm.
We hope.
And you would also hope that at some point that the guys who are making the landing gear parts for the 737 could go to another airplane, the 787 or something like that. But
well, it could be. But they, Boeing has produced more 737s than all their planes they've produced combined.
Yeah, and they're continuing to do that because that's the number one plane in their history, looking at future orders.
Even though it's not the same plane, that's what's causing the problems.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
I mean, really is cause, that is the cause of these problems, that they keep, just because they put the same number on it, it's pretty much a whole new design.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not the way it was sold.
Right.
And that's, I think at the root of it, that's the root of the problem.
Yes.
And you can say it's the same plane, but it's not. And, you know, it doesn't make it bad, it just makes it different. And they approached it, they sold it to people by saying it's the same plane, and it's not.
But a big part of their problem was the software updates, the what's called the MCAS system, automatically tries to stabilize the plane. That when it's in a high pitch, a quick pitch, going up, it forces the nose down, and that's just on a sensor. And what they did incorrectly was have one sensor that triggered that MCAS system instead of having redundancies. And you know, airplanes are notorious for having redundancies. And you say, why do you need five things to tell you the same thing? Well, this is exactly why, because
right.
When one sensor is bad or has a misreading, you want something else. You know, it's not like just if you're on a bike and something happens on your bike and the bike stops. If you're talking about something like this in a plane, it's catastrophic and people die.
Well, also, because you had to move the engines and everything else, it's not the same plane. So the same instincts for the pilot aren't the same, so you had to put this system in there to, quote, help the pilot out, right?
Right.
Which, I don't know if you had that on the 737-200s, 300s, 400s.
Well, I thought that this new sensor, this was a new sensor for the 737 MAX. I thought that this was not merely an upgrade, but a different type of sensor.
Well, they were going to use it on the 767 tankers. And the pilots or whoever the engineers tested it out, and they said, we don't want this. It's terrible. Mm-hmm. So it's not on there. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was purposely. But, you know, we're not the engineers on this, but whenever you go cheap. Now, of course, the 737 MAX was not cheap to design. It's the size of a 757, for God's sake. And it has this, but it's not that big of a frame. I mean, The frame is not the right size for it, in my opinion. Now, of course, a Boeing engineer would tell me I'm an idiot, and I probably am on this subject, but I'm saying they had a 737 that held, 140 people, and you had a 757 that held more. Now, the thing is further off the ground, you have more room for tanks, it's got all that stuff. Well, you stop production on that plane, and you decide you're going to keep making this other one bigger and bigger on the old frame. Now, look at the ones before them, Brenda, the MAX. They're having problems with where the wing attaches, what do they call it, the fork something? It goes down and stabilizes the junction between the wings and the fuselage. There's some kind of fork, they call it.
Yeah, I'm not sure that's
but I'm saying all these are situations where you're putting too much on what, in my opinion, it might be you're just putting too much on. The plane has now gotten too big. I mean, if you look at the old 727s, and the then they became the 7-2 something model. You put those next to an original 727, they were like twice as long. And all Boeing planes since the 707 have been designed to be lengthened because they didn't do that in the 707. And I don't know what the design difference is, but the DC-8s all became stretched DC-8s. They lasted way longer than the 707s.
Mm-hmm.
Look how long those things were.
Yeah.
You ever fly one of those things?
Yeah.
The tube inside, Matty, the single aisle plane went from, it seemed like it went like the length of a football field. A stretch DC-8 had to be the longest single aisle plane ever, wasn't it?
It was pretty long, yes.
And you know, it had four engines. It
was, and relatively narrow.
Yeah. Oh well, it was definitely narrow.
It was a cigar tube.
It was like a 737, like twice as long.
Mm-hmm.
But you had four engines, and you were up off the ground. It was a big heavy duty plane, and it used a lot of gas, which wasn't so hot. But
says it's 150 feet long.
Stretch eight.
Stretch DC-8.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's pretty long.
It's a long way. And what was the, can you find out what the original DC-8 was? I'm going to guess 120. So it was like a 30-foot stretch. I don't know if you can find that, but maybe you can find anything. So in regards to the market, interesting. We'll talk more about it after the break around with Kenny and Joel. But it seems like the one thing that the China deal, no deal, whatever it is, China stand down, I'll call it, says taking a lot out of the VIX. Because everybody's idea that they got to keep waiting by the minute for these tweets back and forth, on again, off again. At least we don't have those to deal with.
Well, Brent, not at the moment, but I heard this morning that they're still undergoing the translation
right
between the two, and China is reportedly saying that the U.S. has released information that they never agreed to.
Well, that's happened every time.
Mm-hmm.
But well, the big part is that Trump is you know blasting through his mouth that they're going to buy what $40-50 billion.
$50 billion of.
And the Chinese are going, we're going to buy them as needed. We're not going to buy them. Mm-hmm. We don't need it.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't know if you can help the farmers that already are in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
Hope you can.
Well, I don't know how you can do that either, because their crops are already done for this year. And, you know, when they're looking at getting money to plant their crops next year, how are they going to get that money when they still owe for the last 2 years? And they've had bad crops, not only because of the China trade war, but also because of weather conditions.
Well, I think it's regional, and we need to get we have to see if we can find a agricultural expert. I mean, my brother used to be, but now he's running the place here. He was more of a corn guy. He traded in the corn pit. But I think the big hit came to the people up north.
Mm-hmm.
Because their stuff just went, there is no, I've mentioned this before, there's no easy way to get from Minnesota or North Dakota to essentially New Orleans. But the train takes you right out to Seattle, and those were the soybeans that went to China, pretty mm-hmm. much. And, so, those are the guys that have gotten hurt. Now, the question is, have the people that up there that have gone under, has, you know, two or three big firms, like it seems like it's an infection in this country, two or three big firms now buy up all these small farms, and now they'll be fine, but the original guys won't be. I mean, that's been going on for how long?
Yeah.
And we seem to love that here. We don't seem, you know, it doesn't seem to be a problem. We love it we've got, what, two or three people left in the option industry.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't one of them hire Ben Bernanke as a consultant? I mean, everybody knows what side your bread is buttered on. I mean, I honestly don't know how we're gonna go from where people getting tired of having three or four people in every industry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, I look at, I met with one of my attorney buddies last night, and of course, a whole bunch of people sit down, and they're all from Market Rec, either at FINRA or the CBOE or whatever. And I, and of course, I'm the old guy who knows the history of the place. But mm-hmm. also, we're talking about, well, don't we need to like help this stuff out? I said, if you didn't screw it up in the first place, you would need to help it now. Basically, I mean, mm-hmm. we start talking about this new system where it's a massive reporting requirement that few people can afford. I'll give a short story. Back in the day, if PTI or any other firm wanted to send an order in for Brendan or Maddie to buy 10 IBM calls, okay? It would go down to the IBM pit, either by phone or by runner or however. It would go into the pit, and a broker would essentially auction price your 10 lot. You know, 130 calls, 408! Okay, I'll buy 10. That type of thing. So whoever was first with the best market, if everybody had the same market, the person who was first got the trade. He might say, I'll do 5, and then the second guy get 5 or whatever. But the fact is, you could see a broker doing your trade in one spot, and the competition was was designed to be as many people as possible in one place so that there was competition for your particular order. Now, most people would say that electronically, manually, however you do it, that's the intelligent way to set it up, correct? Mm-hmm. That's not what we do anymore. We now have like 15 or 16 options exchanges to where you run from place to place and everybody gets paid for the order flow. Well, we don't, but other people do. We don't take payment. So now you have to sit there and say, how do we know that the broker didn't just pay a quarter when it was at an eighth some other place just so they could get more money as a kickback? Now, if you didn't have kickbacks in the first place, you'd have 15 different places you could do the trade. You wouldn't have to worry about any of this. But now you got to put in this massive system that when we put an order in, the people who we put the order in through have to essentially report every single trade that it was the best execution. Somehow, with all the different 15 places that they got the lowest price, and if they get paid for order flow on top of that, then it's okay. So instead of just having the thing in one spot to where you couldn't cheat, now they made it so it's so easy to cheat that you have to prove that you're not cheating. I mean, what fourth grader would design something like that? Just ask him. Why wouldn't you just have all the trades in one spot where if somebody's at an eighth and the trade's a quarter, he bitches about you being traded through, right? Well, hey, wait a minute, I'm at an eighth. What's the matter with you? Why'd you trade at a quarter? Now it's totally unpoliceable by the people in, by both the person put the order in and by the firm. So you have this elongated, but now guess what? There's going to be four or five firms that have the capability of making the reports, and now it's going to be four or five firms doing the execution instead of anybody could do it. Now, but this is happening in every business, every place. In some place, somewhere, there's going to be some sort of a revolution in this country. And I don't know if I want to be alive to see it, but this is crazy. This is crazy, Brendan. It is just crazy. And I'm sure you can name spots that I don't even know about that are the same way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's often a part of government regulations when you're trying to solve what they think is a problem.
Their own problems.
Yeah.
They're solving their own problem they made.
Mm-hmm.
So the order entry system we use and have used for 10 years, which is really good, those guys are saying, screw it, we're not coming up with the money for the new thing, so we got to find another one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, which we already have found, but now the new one's more expensive. Now there's going to be three of those guys. They can charge whatever they want, right?
Yeah.
And it's a point now, we cannot call an order down to the trading floor anymore. Because if you do, how do you prove that it's the best exit? It wasn't better some other place, unless you have this, quote, system that you now need. So there's no such thing as an IB. You probably could to the SPX, because there's only one spot. Or the OEX, because they're still with the CBOE or the VIX. But all the other stuff, there's so many different places, how do you even prove you got the best next? Now, nobody would care if you were actually doing your job, and your job was to get the best next. But now, since the game is to get paid for order flow, and to essentially get kickbacks, you can't trust the firms to do what they're supposed to do, which is get you the best fill that you're paying for. And why do people think that this stuff is free now? It's free. It's free for some people because they're shopping the order, not because they're doing the best job for you. And yet people are so dumb they don't realize that. I mean, people are not dumb individually, but stuff makes people. Does anybody really think something's free?
Wait a minute. You mean it's not?
Well, it's like, anywho, it's sort of not.
You are un-American.
I'm so un-American. Yeah, you know, it's like, you know, buy one get one free. Okay, well, man, we just cut the price in half. Why don't we just do that? But, you know, you still see a lot of that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and then once in a while, it's. You'll see it a lot in, you know, in food stores when they're just trying to get rid of stuff. You know,
oh, yeah. One of my biggest beefs is going to a jeweler to a Mariano's. And, you know, you see a 2-liter bottle.
You're a whole paycheck guy.
Well, you know, you only say that because I've seen you there. Shopping there.
Now, you know the reason I was there. Did I buy anything?
I don't know. I just saw you pushing a cart around. But you saw what I bought. I was drinking a cup of coffee with my team.
Well, that's true. You were. I didn't see you in there poking around.
I wasn't off buying the arugula. I was I was drinking coffee.
I was actually up that morning, Maddie. This is the truth. You can be the judge on this one. I was up that morning like I usually am at the crack of dawn, driving around Saturday, and I go to put the car in the garage, and I see our buddy Eric walking down the block, and I go, "Where are you going?" And he says, "I'm going over the whole paycheck." And I said, "Well, hop in. I got nothing to do. I'll give you a ride over." First time I've ever been in one of those places. I couldn't believe how expensive it was.
Maddie, I don't know about this story, because he walked around like he knew where everything was. He was pointing out, he was asking.
Yeah.
It's not that expensive anymore, actually.
The arugula is not in this. It used to be right over here on this section. Why did you move it?
He's talking
while the guy is stocking the shelves. He goes, "Why did you move things around? I'm used to coming in here and getting my stuff right here."
Well, you know.
Now that Amazon took over, it's not that expensive anymore.
Yeah.
Really? They've actually come down
some? It's very much in line with any other grocery store now.
Yeah. It's amazing what has happened, because Mariano's also has a problem, too, with their quality control since Kroger bought them over. It's really lowering the quality and the standards of both of those chains.
Well, the Meijers, these people have issues. I mean, I go into the Meijers at, 6 o'clock on a Sunday morning, and there's a lot of stuff you can get. If you just wander in and don't care what you're buying,
mm-hmm.
you can actually get... I mean, there's stuff that every month or so, the real good pasta goes on sale for $1 a pound. That's mm-hmm. cheaper than the restaurant depot. I mean, if you just wait, and if you know the routine, and when you buy them, you buy 10 pounds, you never at a loss for pasta, you never pay more than $1, which is, most every place, the good stuff's $1.79, $1.89.
Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden, it'll be 10 for 10 bucks.
But we're getting back to the story that we were talking about at the stores, going in and like to a Jewel or to a Mariano's or something, if you want to buy a 2-liter bottle of Pepsi or A&W root beer or something, it's like $2.99. But it's 79 cents if you buy four. But you must buy in multiples of four. I just don't understand that concept. What is the price? Is it $2.99 or is it 79 cents or is it something in between? And why do you have to buy four? Why do you have to buy four of them to get the lower price?
Actually, I thought that was... I thought you couldn't do that.
Go into any Jewel right now. If you go down the soda aisle, and you'll see things for sale, and they'll have the price on there that says like 79 cents, but you have to buy multiples of four.
Well, they have at the Meijers, they have kind of a bifurcation. They have that once in a while, but if the pass is 10 for 10 bucks, you walk up with five, it's $5.
Mm-hmm.
They don't hit you the old price for...
I think they know that you got a guy.
I got a guy?
Yeah, and that's why you get that, because that has not happened when I've gone in for something.
Well, this is the South Side now. They can't do the same. They have to treat people differently in the South Side, as you're well aware,
mm-hmm.
or else people will never go back.
Mm-hmm.
You know how those Southsiders are.
Yeah.
But, if you just... I think most of these places, if you just wander in... I got in this habit with when my mom was... Want to go every Saturday? I'd take her to the store, right? That's what people do with moms.
Mm-hmm.
And I would never have to. I never needed anything. I just wander up and down the aisle. There's always something you'll buy. Something mm-hmm. that's like on sale at a price. I got to buy some of these.
Yeah, and that's why they put the milk all the way in the back, so you've got to go through the store, so you have a better chance of seeing something else that you really want and really need.
But you know how the Southside store was? There'd be 20 older ladies in there with their coupons, and they're only buying. I don't think I made any money on those ladies. I don't think they ever did.
Mm-hmm.
But the S&P futures down 150, Dow futures down 34, NASDAQ futures down 75 cents. And we'll have Mr. Joel after the break, but I'm also going to check on Boeing's price. It was down $13 yesterday. Be right back, Stacks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right
now, right now. Well, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell. He's Mr. Brennan Cornan. He's Mr. Matt Weber on the board. We'll have Mr. Joel on count in a second. S&P futures down 50 cents. 50 cents is after a four-day run-up. NASDAQ futures down 50 cents. Dow futures down 32, most of that. I'm going to say almost exactly that. It's falling down another 420. And we are, what are we, 780? Every point of a stock in the Dow is up 780, 8 bucks in the average, something like that, Brennan. People don't realize it's quite that much, but it is. It's a lot. Years of multipliers and so forth have got us there. So Boeing was down, I'm going to say 12 or 13 yesterday, down another 420 today. That's a little bit of a hit. DAX down 95. These guys were up yesterday. Down 95.7%. FTSE down 7. They were up like 1.5% yesterday, but they're down 7 today. 0.1%. CAC around down 18.3%. In Asia, we got the Nikkei up 113. Now they were down yesterday, so we're doing a little bit of a flip-flop here. 0.4%. Shanghai, however, up 38. That's 1.2%. Some of the numbers came out to China, they're maybe doing a little bit better. Hang Seng up 335, 1.2%, although I don't trust the numbers over there at all. I trust them less than I trust ours, Brandon. How's that? The oil up 17 cents. 60,
that's saying a lot.
Yeah, 60 bucks a barrel here. Wow. Size we've seen. Well, so much for my 52 to 58 range. Well, we're probably going to ramp. Maybe we should ratchet that range up to 55 to 62 now. Brent up 60, 22 cents, 65. Oil stocks have finally started to move. The XLE's back to 61 for a while. Oil was up like 12% this year, and all the oil stocks and the averages were down. A natural gas, 231, RBOB 166. We've got gold up 250, 1483, silver up 2 cents, 1705. I think some of that has to do with the trade deal. Both sides now are saying they remember different things about the conversation. Go figure. We'll see how that works out. I think there's probably something to this one, Brendan, I think. But Maddie,
something in the way of agreement or something in the way of disagreement?
Well, at least I think they've both decided to stand down for a while and at least say there's something.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can sense it in the VIX. The VIX is down to 12. It's been 15 this whole time of the tweet wars. Anybody for traffic, weather, sports, doubles.
37 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We had an earlier crash on the inbound Eisenhower just before Ridgeland Avenue, and that's been cleared, but that's causing significant congestion as folks are heading in on I-290. Route 390 to the old post office is 53 minutes now already, which is not great for an early Tuesday morning. For Mannheim, it's up to 40 minutes, so expect stop-and-go traffic on I-290 with significant delays due to an earlier crash that just became clear a couple of minutes ago. Rest of the expressways are looking okay, though. No issues on the Edens or Kennedy. Stevenson looks okay. Southside expressways are running smoothly. Off the expressways, a couple of crashes. Western suburbs, County Farm Road at Schick Road, there is a crash. Northern suburbs, Lake Cook Road at Arlington Heights Road, there's an accident. And just north of that, at Route 83 and Peterson, there is a crash. But everything else looking good out there. Weather today, some sunshine today, but still cold temperatures, a high of 34. We will warm up as we head toward the weekend, so that's good. Could touch 50 over the weekend. But right now, a high of just 34. Right now, it's clear and 23 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine with a high of 62 today. Right now, it's clear and 40. In sports, those aforementioned Bulls built a 26-point lead in Oklahoma City before completely collapsing in the fourth quarter. They lost to the OKC Thunder 109-106. Suns lost by one at home to the Blazers 111-110. And in Monday Night Football, it was the Saints all over the Colts 34-7. Chief.
As the Eagles once said, city girls seem to find out early how to open doors with just a smile. I get this call from my significant other, the lovely Audrey. She and her friend are down in Scottsdale. Guess where we're going tonight? Gee, how could I possibly guess? I'm up here working away as you guys are enjoying yourself. We've got two floor tickets courtside to the Phoenix games with a Phoenix Suns game with a parking pass.
Wow, that's pretty good.
Like, very nice.
I'm like, wow, they don't even like basketball. So what? We're in the front row.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Front row to an NBA game is something I've still never done that I would love to do.
Oh, I would too, but it's a dangerous place to be when those big guys are moving down the court.
I sat at the Joel, how are you?
Real quick. I'm doing well, Chief. How you doing?
I'm doing all right.
Tuesday morning.
5 second story here. We had
5 seconds.
Jim Tyree. He was still alive.
At Mesro.
His guy, Stan Lease, we cleared through Mesro at the time. So Stan calls me up and he says, do you want to use Tyree's tickets at the Bulls game tonight, you and I? And I go, sure. There are the two folding chairs. I was on one side of the center court and he was on the other. Well, so then he gets violently ill. And of course, you've got all these rules in the industry. You can't just give, the tickets to somebody. You got to go. So this has got to be, Jim's been dead 8 years, 10 years?
Mm-hmm.
The tickets were $750 then.
Mm-hmm.
And so Stan can't go. And then he's like, they're calling their attorneys in New York saying, can we still give them to this guy? Are we going to get in trouble? Blah, blah, blah. And the guy goes, well, you're not going to waste them. Give them to somebody. So Larry and I go, it was pretty neat. I mean, you sit there and you couldn't go get up and get your own beer. I mean, there's got to be a guy who walks behind you and gets your stuff because, mm-hmm. They don't want you to get up during the game.
Well, they don't want the empty seat.
Well, yeah, plus they don't want you getting up and walking down a court while the guys are playing ball. But the funny part, Maddie, you'll love this. First half is pretty dull, like most games are, and the ref comes stand right next to you. So all of a sudden, the second half, somebody comes in and somebody hammers the dude, right? Because now, the second half, they start playing a little harder. And I go to the ref, hey, looks like the price of basketball is heating up. He goes, yeah, I got to do my job this half, it looks like. Joel, how are you, buddy?
I'm doing well here, Chief. Do they, I know it's been a while since that old Chicago Stadium, but at the new place, was it United Center? Do they still stand up and cheer through the national anthem?
For the Hawks, yeah. I don't think
it's
they do
not the same as it was at the old stadium.
No. They do not do that for the Bulls, though, only the Blackhawks.
Only the Blackhawks, yeah. Yep, I remember
and
that.
And they bang on the glass.
The old stadium, I recall that place. If you go to the second balcony, you had like a narrow stairwell to get up there or down, right? They actually had a couple of fire escapes on the outside of the building. I don't know what would possess you to go down. You'd almost rather burn than go down one of those things. But, well, not really. But they used to smoke in there, Joel. You could, by the third period, you couldn't even see the ice half the time. I mean, half the people were smoking. And it was, there wasn't much ventilation in there, Brendan, I don't think.
No, not very much at all. I was there.
Yeah, I mean, it was a great place to watch a basketball game. You were right on the court.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think the court, the ice was... Was it short? It was narrower, right? It was like 12 feet narrower, 10 feet narrower than a regular. It was something.
I don't remember that.
Might have been shorter because all those old rinks, none of them were the right size.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, so Joel, you got you guys are going to at least to a decent bowl. Your basketball team.
Oh man, Chief, I'm staying up late at night thinking about that game.
Well, all you guys going to play?
Yeah, as of, I'm not worried about our guys. You know, it looks like so far Bama's top wide receiver, I think, what's his name, Gerard Judy or something.
Yeah.
He said he's going to play. Saban's going to be out for blood. You know, the Michigan players are going to be there, but boy, oh boy, I just, I don't know. That seven doesn't seem like enough, but we'll see. We'll see what happens. This is going to be, it's a big game, but thinking about it a lot.
What do you get? Which bowl are you in? The Orange Bowl?
Citrus Bowl.
All right.
Yeah, yeah, they put us on New Year's Day, and tough draw. I'm sure Saban would just love to stick a dagger in the Harbaugh. We'll see what, Shea Patterson, I mean, this guy, I don't think he ever really lived up to his press clippings here, so if he wants to, he wants to get anybody looking at him at the late rounds or as a potential free agent. He's gonna have to play against the big boys here.
Well, and don't
need a big game out of Shea Patterson.
Aren't both of those, I'll say, knuckleheads, Harbaugh and Saban both making commercials for State Farm? Or one of
you're in good hands.
What's his name? Harbaugh is State Farm, right? They're trying to get his khakis pressed.
That's from a while ago, isn't it?
Well, a couple of months.
I have not seen that recently. No, no, I have not. But I've seen Saban on a couple different commercials. But
is he State Farm?
Yeah,
as well?
Like they need to supplement those salaries.
Yeah, I mean, how could you live on $4.5 million?
I have no idea.
It's
impossible.
You know, it's kind of, you know, the price of yachts today. You know, you just can't live.
The funny
it.
Thing is, the chief thinks they only make $4.5 million.
Isn't that the official thing?
I think those guys are both making about 10 when you factor in the full contracts.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the ones that Kevin brings that up, because you actually can tell what Saban is making, because it's a state institution, right? Well, you'll never get another the full price of the guy at Notre Dame, because they don't have to report it. But all the state schools do. I mean, Kevin knows where to dig all that stuff up.
Yeah, it's just not, yeah, that what they're making from the state, and yeah. But, you know, the endorsements and speaking engagements and, you know, those things on the side can add up, too.
Well, the idea that the students can't be in a commercial because they own your likeness, yet the coach can.
That's one of the most ridiculous things.
Yeah, I mean, how absurd is that? I mean,
because everybody goes to watch the coach in those games.
Yeah,
not the players.
What is Saban's not State Farm? He's some insurance. Is he Progressive? Is he on with what's her name? The lady in white.
Is that Flo?
Yeah, is he on with? Anyway, Joel. So what do you make? I noticed the. The VIX came down with the amount of tweets on China dropping off. Other than that, where do you think this deal? Are we done celebrating the deal, or what are we doing here?
Oh, I don't know. Why don't we celebrate it a few more times? I mean, it looks it's been celebrated before it was done. All those pullbacks from any indecision that was going on with opportunities here. We're getting the old trade up near all-time highs. This is really, I don't think I can remember a market in my history that's made new all-time highs on such a consistent basis. So, no weakness. I don't know about the VIX. I don't know what you're looking at here. Good jobs number at the end of the month. The only thing that may give us a little volatility, you know, you got Quad Witch on Friday.
Yep.
But besides that, you know, really no big earnings reports. Analysts are doing a little bit of work, but that's afterwards. You got a few other reports, but so far it just looks like, you know, you got your big stocks, you know, Microsoft and Apple just going up virtually every day.
Yep.
So let's leave those two stocks going up, big part of the index.
Joel, we
the
only have a
follow.
We only have 30 seconds. Why does everybody reference last month's good job number, where if you take this year, the job growth is less than last year, and if you average the last 3 months, you're right back to your 180,000, which we've been doing for 5 years. Why?
The media, like, you know, because it, you know, everyone's so focused on interest rates, but you're right, within a hair. I mean, it's still, it's not the booming growth that we want, but it's not the, you know, deceleration and the recessionary fears that we had a couple weeks ago. So, extremes. The media, always on the extremes of things. Everything's really good or really bad.
Well, next week, let's talk a little, cut a few minutes out to talk about what the Fed's doing, because the numbers last week, I'm absolutely somewhat between appalled and whatever, because I've never seen him do anything like this. Joel, take care of yourself, buddy.
Go Blue.
SP futures up 50 cents, NASDAQ futures down 75. Can't keep a market like this down. Be right back, Mr. Kenny Pulcheri.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters: the Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures Trading Recommendations, and our twice weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a 1 month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with their choice. At PTI, we have always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Money, get away. Get a good job with the pain, you're okay.
Hello and welcome to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Allen. Mr. Brendan Cornyn is in the studio with Mr. Kenny Pulcheri on the phone. Mr. Pulcheri, how are you, buddy?
I'm good, sir. How are you? I'm sorry about last week. I had to go to New York at the last minute. Completely forgot to call you.
Well, we also have Mr. Mike Hart in the studio, but AV forgot to call you too. So it worked.
Oh, perfect. I don't feel so bad.
Well, she was
Thanks for your apology, but it wasn't necessary.
Yeah, it wasn't necessary. We were going to apologize to you. We were...
I was on a plane at 7:30, and I went, oh, my God, I forgot to call him.
She was a little out there because she had ordered a credit card, and when it got to her place, somebody must have lifted it out of her mailbox and then applied for, like, two others in her name or something.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so it's kind of a mess. And I mean, she was on the phone with everybody trying to do that. So how are you? Everything good?
I'm good. I'm good. Thank you. And you?
All right. I saw you on TV a couple times. You look good. You look good.
Well, thank you.
You were gesturing pretty good, and the beard looks good.
I will be on again tomorrow on the exchange at 1:00.
Good for you. I mean, I'll be sure to watch. Hey, I'm going to ask you because I sent a letter out to my buddy Carl last. I could not believe the Fed numbers last week, where the money supply growth is now over 10%. And they put $30 billion on the balance sheet, which is more than they were doing per month in QE3. And yet nobody is saying boo about why. And my buddy Carl comes back and he goes, I don't know what's happening, but this is not good. What are they doing?
I think they're trying to just keep everything stable, right, as we go into the end of the year, as they were waiting for some result on trade, which we apparently got, although that's still kind of unclear in terms of the details. They tell us it's a done deal, and Bobby Lighthizer said yesterday it's totally done, absolutely done.
Yeah.
And so the only thing we're missing are the details. So I think the Fed's just trying to keep the markets calm and trying to keep stability until we get through this, until we understand what the deal is, and is it really the deal that they say it is.
Pretty soon, Kenny, I'm not going to be the only guy standing on a ledge talking about inflation, because it's...
Listen, I hear you loud and clear, but right now, you know, according to every measure out there that they're telling us, there isn't any inflation. Yet you go to the store, you go to the... It's really in the supermarket. I mean, it's not really... You don't see it so much anywhere else, but in the supermarket, the prices are crazy.
Yep.
And I got to tell you, and for that, and for everyone else to say... You know, the economy is so slow and all this stuff. I got to tell you, I had to go to, like I said, you had to go to New York on Tuesday. The flight was full. There wasn't a seat to be had. LaGuardia Airport was a disaster. People traveling everywhere. The traffic in New York City, you couldn't get around because the taxis, the cabs, the people, the walking, the shopping, it's out of control. You can't get a reservation at a restaurant. So I'm not sure where they're saying, you know, the economy is so bad. At least up in the Northeast and even down here in Florida, the economy seems to be fine. I don't know out there by you in Chicago. But, you know, people are spending money. People are going places. Planes are full. It's hustle and bustle.
Well, how much of that the planes? Because I don't know. I haven't flown that much. But Steve Leisman was talking the other day that since the 737 MAX got grounded, he thinks that, was it just American or was it American United combined, that 50,000 flights have been canceled. Some massive number.
Yeah, I think that was the number that we saw. Crazy. Southwest Airlines uses the MAX too, and they've been canceled. They started canceling flights out too because now they're taking it out of service. But it's crazy that all these flights have gotten canceled. Now, listen, I would imagine that although he said all these flights are canceled, they somehow had to add flights back in because they couldn't have. That's a lot of flights. That's a lot of people that would have been disrupted. That's a lot of traveling and business travel and whatever that would have been disrupted. So I can't believe that there haven't been alternative flights that have been put in place, right? Although he didn't say that, he just talked about the cancellations. But one way or the other, it's a problem. And now that Boeing has completely stopped producing this thing as of January, you know, it's not going to be as easy as Boeing led us to believe. Oh yeah, this is a simple problem, we're going to fix it. Not so much. And all their estimates have been off. And now that, you know, their association with the FAA, which they thought was going to be, you know, hunky dory, quite honestly, isn't. But you know what? The FAA shares some of the responsibility in this as well, as far as I'm concerned, because they went off and signed off on this plane, and you know everything was great, everything was fine, and now all of a sudden they're going, well, maybe not so much, and so you know there's a lot of blame to go around, but we'll see.
Well,
what
I think the FAA finally came to the realization that it's not just a 737-300 to 400; it's a new plane, and I think they didn't,
exactly right,
and they didn't realize that before. It's a big difference.
Well, you know, for you to say they didn't realize that before, I agree with you, but how could they not realize it? That's their job to realize it, right?
Well, I mean, today with Boeing, I mean, this guy has been pushing on Boeing pretty hard, okay? Now, what makes you think, I mean, and you're closer to this, so this is a question, not a leading witness. How many phone calls do you think are coming from Congress today to the FAA saying, what the bleep are you doing? I've got the seat manufacturers in my district. They all just laid everybody off. I'm going to say 150 to 200,000 people are going to get laid off this month because of this.
I hear you, but guess what? Do you want to fly a plane that's unsafe and put more people at risk, or do you want to correct a problem? I'm not saying that the people that are going to laid off, that I don't feel badly for them, but the fact is, this has been a circus watching this whole thing unfold, starting from when the first crash happened and how they handled it, then the second crash and then how they handled it. You know, it's been a circus. And so at some point, you got to fix the problem.
Well, I had this, by the way, the second time this morning I've had this discussion, Mr. Weber. It's very easy. You and I know you hope you don't put the thing back knowing it's unsafe. But we also know it's real easy to be some doofus senator to call up and give the guy some pressure and then say, well, I never said put it back up if it was unsafe, right?
Well, I hear you because that's what they would say, but yeah. I imagine they are getting calls from senators and congressmen, you know, kind of bitching and complaining about the fact that this is dragging on, and there are now people at risk. Although yesterday, when Boeing came out and said, I was just waiting to see what they were going to say about it. They were talking about it on CNBC. You know, that Boeing's going to now cease production, and they got 12,000 employees at this one plant in Reston, Washington, that makes this plane, but yet no one's going to lose their job. But yet, all the suppliers, 600 plus suppliers along the route are going to be furloughed. Never mind the deli shop and the coffee shop and all those guys that depend on the people that work there for their jobs. So, you know, it's a ripple effect in terms of the effect it's going to have on that part of the economy out there in that part of the world. But it's interesting because they said they're not going to lay anybody off. So I wonder what they're going to do with those people. They're going to start to make a different plane at that plant?
You can't. How are you going to do that?
I was waiting to hear what they were going to say. Otherwise, they're going to have people standing around doing what?
Boy, if you actually
pay them, I guess. But what are they going to do with them?
Well, they have.
Well, which is worse for them from an economic standpoint, to let them go or to pay them for doing nothing by standing around and waiting for this to clear up?
Yeah, but what do you do with the plane that's three quarters done? We can't.
Yeah, listen, I agree with you. The workers are not the ones that should be penalized, quite honestly. I say the company, Boeing, has completely mishandled this, in my opinion. Dennis Muhlenberg, you know, he should be the first one to go because at some point a head has to roll, and I think it was made very obvious that, you know, he wasn't paying attention when they notified him, the pilots or whoever the people, you know, notified him a year ago or a year and a half ago that there was something wrong with his system. It fell on deaf ears. Mm-hmm. At some point, the buck's got to stop somewhere, and it should stop with him. And not that that's going to fix the problem, but I think what it would do is it's going to then reinvigorate that conversation. They're going to get somebody new, somebody with an engineering background, somebody that can go in and fix this. Or maybe that person doesn't exist, which is why they haven't got rid of him yet.
Kenny, do you think somehow that the problem, as they delved into it further, the problem's gotten worse and not better? It almost feels that way.
Absolutely, I think it's gotten worse. The only reason it's gotten worse is because look at this now. It's been a year, right? That second crash was last December, wasn't it, when that second crash happened? So it's been exactly a year. And remember, in January and February, oh, yeah, we're going to have this fixed in a couple of weeks. Oh, yeah, we're going to rewrite the computer program, and everyone's going to be trained. It's going to be fine. Well, guess what? Ain't happening, and it certainly doesn't look like it's happening anytime soon. They were talking about this morning. Some analyst was on CNBC saying, you know, he's not going to get real nervous about Boeing until the end of the first quarter, right? If nothing happens by March 31st, then he's going to start to get nervous about Boeing. But until then, he says he thinks he's okay.
Well, you almost wonder.
I don't know.
Obviously, they can't just pull that thing off the plane and say, fly it yourself. I mean, there's something wrong here.
No, they can't pull it off the plane.
No.
Which now brings up the point, what exactly is the problem?
Right.
The plane is a plane. They designed this plane. What is it about the software that causes this plane to not fly properly?
Well, originally, the impression was if you just turned the thing off and left it off, everything would be fine. Obviously, it's not. Right?
I mean, right.
All right, bud. Take care of yourself. We'll talk to you before Christmas.
All right, we'll talk to you next week.
All right. S&P futures down 2. NASDAQ futures down 2. Boeing now down 475. Be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices, along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs. Interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous. No return on cash balances. May have some invested a little too much for comfort. Some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, yet they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with Jan Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we're also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Hi, this is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty, the increased volatility of commodities and currencies, or the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes? If you have answered yes to any of these questions, we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. More information about these exciting programs and much more can be obtained from our website at PTISecurities.com or feel free to email me at john@PTISecurities.com. That's JOHN@PTISecurities.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
There's something happening here.
Welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell. Mr. Brendan Cornan, exactly. Mr. Matt Weber on the board. We also have Mr. Mike Hart subbing in. He can never really sub in for Jeff, even though I do mention that when you're here that he comes back the next week that he's going to be the Wally Pipp. You know who Wally Pipp is, right, Mark?
I actually don't.
Pipp, Lou Gehrig.
Ah, there you go.
Wally Pipp got what he had hit in the head with a ball the day before, right? And he wandered in the batter's box and said,
and he was the everyday player.
Yeah, he was, and he goes,
he's starting first baseman.
He says, so I'm still a little foggy from the day before, and they took him out, and Lou Gehrig went in there, and what, 2,000 games later?
Yes, I remember this story.
Yeah.
Iron Man, the Iron Man Lou Gehrig.
Yeah.
Still one of the top 10 two sport athletes ever.
What was Tom Brady's, like, entrance onto the field? I can't remember. Wasn't there a similar story?
Drew Bledsoe was the longtime starting quarterback for the Patriots for several years, and they had some good teams. Not great, but good teams. In fact, they made it to a Super Bowl one year in 97, I believe. 96, 97.
Drew Bledsoe, he was a quarterback for the Bills. We picked him up afterwards, but it didn't work out so well.
He was kind of over the hill at that point, but he got hurt, and a rookie sixth or seventh round pick, Tom Brady out of Michigan, comes out there, and the Patriots win, and he plays pretty well, and Brett Bledsoe says, yeah, I probably need another week, and Brady comes out there, and they win again, and they keep winning, and then all of a sudden, they're in the playoffs, and everyone's like, Bledsoe's healthy, should we switch back to him? And Belichick says, I'm going to ride the young guy, and then they end up winning the Super Bowl in 2001, and then Brady never lost his job since, and he's going down as one. It's very similar to the Lou Gehrig thing.
Where did
Tom Brady became Tom Brady.
Yeah, exactly.
Where did Bledsoe go to college?
Washington State, I believe.
That's right. He was good. He was a good quarterback.
Very good player. Not a Hall of Famer, but like the one tier down. Very good player, Pro Bowler. Played, like Mike said, played for Buffalo afterward. Played probably, 10, 12 years in the NFL? Very good starting quarterback.
Yeah, I grew up in Western New York, so the only thing we really had, Buffalo Bills.
So you guys are having a good year this year.
We're having an amazing year. We had the Pittsburgh Steelers this weekend, and, that's always a rivalry that even to the end, we were winning at the end, but, it's a nail-biter all the time because the Buffalo Bills, they just seem, this year, finally, they're breaking kind of the, I'm not going to say a curse, but it's just been a rough 20 years of my life.
Well, I really like your coach. I think you have a really good coach. You have a really good defense. And you have an offense that is kind of conservative and does just enough to win, and that's a recipe to win in the NFL. I mean, you can win a lot of games that way.
Yeah, it's just nice to see this year, definitely.
Well, anybody can have a bad century, as they say.
Well, the Bills, when I was growing up, I mean, the Bills were
Jim Kelly
in the 90s with
O.J. Simpson.
I'm saying in the 90s with Jim Kelly and Thurman Thomas and Bruce Smith and Cornelius Bennett and Don Beebe and all those guys, they went to the Super Bowl four straight years.
Yeah.
And they lost all four.
they were like the Vikings.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Marv Levy. I mean, they were awesome, and they were so exciting. They scored a ton of points. They, had the great pass rush. But they just could not get over, the Cowboys or the Redskins or the Giants, and they just weren't quite good enough to beat the NFC team.
Yeah, it was tough growing up to those kind of losses, but, it teaches you in life. Like, sometimes you don't win them all. There's a great – have you guys ever seen the 30 for 30 series produced by – I think ESPN does it.
Is it the best players or something?
Well, it's like they're documentaries on, sport athletes and teams, but they did a great – docuseries on the Buffalo Bills, so I believe it's called like the Four Losses of Buffalo or something.
Yeah, I saw it, and it was great.
It was great.
Yeah, it was fantastic. That was a great time, just in sports in general.
Definitely,
the late '80s and early '90s was
looking back on it now. Yeah,
a lot more pure, in my opinion. Maybe it wasn't, but it seemed like it because there was no social media to know every single thing that these guys were doing, like off the field.
Yeah, good point. Well, yeah, it's
now. I mean, they're probably the same, but. The Jordan era Bulls, the those Cowboys and Bills teams of the 90s. I mean, it was awesome.
We could combine this discussion and the one that we were talking about earlier, and where's all this money going? Because I think, Carl's real concerned about it. So am I, obviously. But you notice, how do we get from the individual people, let's say families, are up from 50,000 to 56,000 in 20 years or 57,000. Yet you have individual people where every man is supposed to be buying tickets to support, a left tackle making $30 million a year or 20 or something. I mean, this is a major disconnect. And somehow or another, they've kept up with it through TV. Mm-hmm. I just wonder if, what are these guys seeing going forward? And what are they looking to see? What is a pitcher going to be making a scale of 1 to 10 a 9 or 10 pitcher going to be making in their mind in the year, you know, where are we? We're 2019. In 2025. I mean, do they think that the average guy is going to be making 30 mil, therefore they got a deal? Or what's the future they see versus the future we see when we see raises are very grudging across the board? I don't see how the family making, you know, what they're making now, if they're making 65 or 68 in 2025, I don't know how that translates into an average pitcher making $25 million. I mean, maybe it does, and if the, you know, the 1-2 percenters can support all this stuff, but I don't know. I'm having a disconnect with the values here. I mean, it'll help me.
Somebody. Well, it'll be interesting to see what happens with Gerrit Cole, because with his contract, if you figure he's going to get 30 starts a year, he's making roughly $1 million per start for the next 9 years. And that's assuming he stays healthy and stays as a good pitcher.
Right.
That's a lot of money for people from the stands to be supporting the team ownership. However, I go back to the Marvin Miller comment when he was in charge of the players' union, and he was getting a lot of pushback, you know, for raising the salaries from, you know, superstars making $50,000 a year and having to get a job selling insurance in the offseason where they are right now. And he said, well, if the players don't get the money, the owners are going to get the money. Mm-hmm. So we've got a big pie here, and there's a lot of money to be distributed here, so who's going to get it? If the owners weren't making money, they would not offer this kind of money to Gerrit Cole, or more importantly, to the 25th guy on the team, or now next year 26th guy on the team, making hundreds of thousands of dollars a year.
Well, the minimum Major League Baseball now is $1 million. Hmm. Right, Betty?
I didn't realize that.
Is it $1 million? Yeah. I thought it was like $650 or $750.
I thought it was
like
$1 million. Or is it NBA? Somebody's $1 million.
We're almost talking real money here when you're talking about $650,000 a year for a guy who's sitting on the bench gathering splinters. But, you know, it's a far cry. From what it was back in the 70s when Marvin Miller was head of the union.
Well, Marvin Miller was, my buddy from the trading floor, one of the most brilliant men I've ever come across, a guy named Marty O'Connell. He had a Notre Dame MBA, Stanford law degree. I mean, he was, you know, pretty extreme on the education part. And we used to talk about how free agency was not the issue. They got people money. It was arbitration.
Mm-hmm.
And the owners, and I think everybody who's ever had a second grade economics class would know that if they just declared everybody a free agent, the salaries would go down, not up.
Mm-hmm.
Yet the owners are so egotistical, they want control, they'd almost rather pay more.
Yeah, but also when you're talking about their ego, they want to compete against each other for the free agent. They'll bid themselves up. It's like going to,
well, that's what I'm saying,
to a charity auction, and they'll just keep bidding themselves up because they don't want the other guy to get the prize
player.
But
if they just did that for the guy,
mm-hmm.
I won't say it's no big deal. It's a big deal if you're the guy. It's a real big deal.
Do you think with the changing, you know, sellers are going higher, and you look back, part of it's sort of the legacy of how the system's set up. Do you think at some point they need to reconsider how everything's laid out? Like you said, turn everything to free agency, or, you know, maybe the system itself never expected this type of evolution to where it's at now.
Well, I don't think that Marvin Miller saw this kind of salary structure, but he did see it opening up the floodgates for the betterment of the players. And he also brought in free agency because at that time players were under contract to their teams. And he brought about player movement, which also contributed to this, that he got a guy like Gerrit Cole who could bid his services out to the highest bidder. Mm-hmm. I don't think that if you're looking at people in the 60s and the 70s, if you look at Curt Flood and Marvin Miller, they never thought that price were going to get this high for the star players. They never thought the price were going to get this high for the, you know, the backup catcher.
But well, you never thought that when our tickets, Big Don and mine, 1983, I'm going to say our upper deck first row seats at Wrigley were $350. If you put them in the consumer price number, they should be $17 or $18 today, and they are
a couple hundred.
Well, no, they're probably $85 or $90 upper deck. Maybe pushing $100, but they're not a couple hundred in the upper deck. I don't think. But it's all a gamble and it's all a game. I mean, when you look at going forward, I mean the. the classic one was Magic Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all of a sudden the game ran ahead of him, and after 4 years, $1 million, it was chump change.
Yeah.
Right? But then when the Cubs hired Soriano, they thought that a middle-of-the-road outfielder 5 years later was going to be making $8 million a year. Mm-hmm. If the economy sucked, basically. And all of a sudden, when he was making eight, you could get somebody as good as him for three.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't like he ever played horribly. I mean, he had a nice career with the Cubs. He just, he had gotten a peak year and they signed him. Now, you wonder, you can't tell me, no matter how dumb these people may be, well, they're not dumb because they know the money that's coming in. You can't tell me that some economist somewhere isn't advising the Nationals and said, don't worry about it. The skybox, it's now, you know, $1,000 a ticket, and 5 years is going to be $1,500 ticket. Mm-hmm. Or he's going to say it'll still be $1,000, or he might say this economy doesn't look so hot, it might be $800. Mm-hmm. But without that kind of an estimate going forward from somebody, how do you decide to pay somebody a 9-year deal?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you sort of can't. I don't see how you could. I mean, there's a lot more that goes into this. That was, Mike, I was doing this thing with the, there was an article, I probably have it buried in my files. The year that, was it Roger Clemens, Matty, somebody's last year was not that long ago. It was like 5-6 years. Some guy's last year, he just got, may have a bidding war for him. It's a Hall of Fame guy. And it was between the Boston Red Sox and the Yankees and somebody else. And was it Clements, or was one of the guys like that? And the Yankees, this whole article went through the whole thing. Okay, the guy needs to make like $2 million or $3 million in the last half of the season, because he was just, you know, wherever he was a star pitcher. And they said, okay, well, the Yankees' fifth starter is actually pretty good. So say he's going to be .500, even if you brought, you know, Roger Clemens or whoever the hell it is in there, and even though it's his last year, if he's gonna be worth two wins to you on the Yankees, then it's $1.5 million a win. And those two wins will get you to X per year wins, and what the chances are of that would get you in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. Now the Boston Red Sox, their fifth starter was horse bleep, basically, or the other way around. So you could actually count on maybe Roger Clemens getting you four wins, which means you were almost guaranteed being in the playoffs because your other guys were that good. So how much more he was worth for Boston than he was, if you really went through it, than he was for the Yankees. And sure enough, Boston outbid the Yankees. So, I mean, it's not like these guys have no method in their madness.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, somewhere along the line, Jerry Jones must have felt that Ezekiel Elliott is worth two wins to the guy. That without him, they'll have a decent team and they'll be .500 with him. They're playoff bound. Am I right, Matty? I mean, whether the math is proper or not, you can't believe that the guy didn't go through that somehow, even mentally.
You would think so, even though in today's NFL, I don't think it's very rarely worth it to pay for a running back.
Mm-hmm. Well, but he's special. I mean,
he is special. I agree. But still, I mean, much more valuable to use that space on multiple players.
Well, the only way I'll push back, as many knows, is more than me, the stat man. If you have a running back that essentially is a combination of the first two running back downs and the third down, you're essentially picking up two players in one guy.
Which is to some degree, but then he's taking twice the beating, and his shelf life will be shorter.
Well, I mean, a Walter Payton that never comes off the field that was just as valuable as a blocker and a receiver as he was a running back, those are very rare commodities.
Correct.
But they used to have to take Eric Dickerson off the field on third down, right, because the guy mm-hmm. could catch a pass if his life depended on it.
Right.
How much do you think these decisions are based off of kind of gut feel of the coaches and managers, or is it more based on some type of statistical model? Because I know in baseball, everyone's seen Moneyball, and you know, the idea of Billy Beane putting everything into a statistical model rather than looking at the players and kind of that gut feeling of this guy looks really good, they look at their team more like a portfolio. And they look at kind of the stats around it, and they say, what stats do we have to basically pat? And does this player fit those stats? Or are they looking more at, we need a running back, or we need a quarterback, and it's sort of a decision that's outside of the box of everything else, and it's just filling that position?
Well, that was Chief's point earlier when he was talking about all the statistics and the Roger right. Clemens example as to whether this guy is worth two wins to them. And two wins in football is a lot more valuable to two wins in baseball.
Sure.
because of the number of games.
Unless you're right on the bubble in the wild card.
No. I think overall that a change in two games in football where you've got 16 games in the year is much more valuable than two games in baseball where it's 162 games a year.
Correct. What I'm saying is it gets a little narrower. I'm just pushing back a hair, Brennan, as if you're talking about the three or four teams that are in the championship slash wild card hunt.
Mm-hmm.
And you know who you are. The also-rans are all already also-rans. So to those guys, two or three wins is very important.
Right. No, I agree with that.
And to put that in perspective, the WAR leader in baseball, wins above replacement, where they actually do value each player as its wins above a replacement player.
Hmm.
The best player this year was Mike Trout at 8 wins. So he's 8 wins better than, you know, the replacement player. That's the most valuable guy really of all time. When it's all said and done, it will be Mike Trout probably unless he gets hurt. And you're only worth 8 wins out of 162.
Yeah, and didn't do the Angels very good this year.
No.
Well, I mean, what is a 320 hitter, which there are very few, versus a 250 hitter is two hits a week, Manny?
Yeah.
Yep.
You know, but I mean, you're hitting the ball harder. You might be causing more errors. You're doing something, but it's two hits a week,
yeah,
basically. But that, you know, it's a lot. But I think you have to, you know, that's the weird part about baseball is it coming down the stretch. You know, that's where. What do you think, Matty? You're the man here. What do you think making the playoffs, even if you get swept in the first round of baseball, what's that worth to the home to the team itself? Do you have any idea?
Well, I mean, literally, what's it worth? If you're a wild card team, it's potentially worth nothing unless you're the home team. Then it's worth one game.
Right.
Now,
you must have to share some of that with the visitor if it's one game.
The concession and stuff? Why would you have to share that?
No, I don't think you share the concession.
Well,
I mean the
live gate.
You may share the gate. And if it's a 7-game series, do they just split it 7 games, 3.5 each, or does the home team get 4 and the visiting team get 3? I don't know how that works as far as the gate's concerned and the concession and everything else.
Well, no, the TV is shared among all the leagues, or the guys actually playing get a little cut, a little something?
Well, there's playoff bonuses that every player gets as part
of their... I'm talking about the ownership.
And ownership, I think it's all split among every team, not just the playoff teams. I think.
Agree. Yeah. I think that's true in football and baseball.
So the owners would get the live gate.
You look at, like, types of incentives and how they affect behavior, and it makes me wonder when you have incentive packages set up, however they're set up, if players sort of respond to it in the sense, kind of like game theory in a sense, where, you know, it seems like we have a lot of game sevens in sports in general. And I wonder, and actually I don't know, I'm just kind of throwing it out there, you guys are experts in this. But is there some incentive to actually have that game seven? Is there a lot more money?
Oh, yeah.
Lots of money.
Yes.
There's a lot of money with that game seven, and we see a lot of game sevens, so it just makes me wonder if the
I don't think there's any incentive for the players. In fact, I think
it's
a disincentive for the players.
No, there's no incentive for the players.
It's more chance for injury. It's more chance for fatigue. Mm-hmm.
There's no actual monetary incentive for the players to do that.
Well, unless they've got a bonus clause in their contract that if they win the World Series, then...
Well, no, but that's not the question. The question is to extend the series to 7 games.
They'd much rather
win in 4 games.
That's right.
Okay, that makes sense.
You always want to win in as few games as possible.
It's just a conspiracy theory that I had.
Well, I mean, if you go back to in the league, I mean, Manny hates when I say this, but the league that I've always thought was, if there was a league that was fixed, it was always basketball. I mean, pro basketball, I mean, way back in the day, if you go to a home game, where 2 500 teams, which the Bulls kind of were half the time, the record on the road would be horrible, and the record at home would be great. It seemed like if you go as a totally impartial observer, even though I wanted to see the Bulls win, the home team got like 2 or 3 calls in the last minute or two, and that was it. If that wasn't enough, but there's reasons why, not just the home team yelling or home fans yelling that, you know, Boston would go to play the Lakers and they'd get their ass kicked the first 2 games. You know, this guy's falling out and that, and, you know, fights. And all of a sudden they go to Boston, it's a totally different world. All of a sudden the calls go the other way. I mean, did basketball want that to go 7? Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm not saying it was totally fixed, but everybody in the world knows that they wanted us to go 7. Now,
although the World Series this year where the home team lost every game.
I'm saying baseball, I thought, was never fixed quite like basketball, because basketball, the revenue, you want, I mean, the 500 teams, you want to send the home team home crowd, home happy. It was like professional wrestling, for God's sake, for a while.
But you're coming about the Boston Celtics. You know, when they went back to Boston, they knew where all the dead spots were on the floor.
Well, that's right. I mean, there's a home court advantage of some sort. But, I mean, come on. What did John Madden say? Venue never won a football game?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, but sometimes you'd see the – plus basketball, all you do is give a guy a couple of quick fouls, and he's no good to you.
Right.
I mean, you can really fix a college game with only five fouls. Yeah. I mean, what, Matty, what do you do if a team's got one star and he's on the road and the guy breathes on somebody hard a couple of times and he's got two fouls and he doesn't play the rest of the first half? You might as well just tell the team go home.
It can be like that, especially in college.
Yeah. I mean, the pros with the sixth foul is a dramatic difference, don't you think, Matt?
Of course, yeah. And a lot of people are asking for college to go to six fouls.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, I've sure seen it. I mean, especially, you know, every
as a fan, no one wants to see guys foul out, especially star players. It's just, you know, it's like you could call a foul on every play if you wanted to. What's the point? Let them play. No one wants to see star players foul out.
Well, especially when you go into, like, double and triple overtime, you don't give people another foul. I mean, the game's starting to be 4 hours long.
Right.
And that, you know, I kind of have another question here. So they're changing a lot of, or there's talk of changing some rules in sports as far as the length of the game, things like that. There's a lot of purists out there who say, you know, you're ruining the game by adjusting the rules. Even in NFL and the types of, you know, playbacks where we can replay plays and make different decisions around it. We're seeing that all over the place. Do you think we're going to see more of those changes, or is it still a slow process?
No, I think there'll be more changes. And looking, in fact, at what baseball is proposing for next year, where a relief pitcher has to face at least three batters or an inning. And, you know, one argument is that you're changing the game, but the other thing is that if you were to go back in history, when a starting pitcher would go nine innings unless he had a broken arm or unless he was really getting shelled, the game has already changed in many ways. It's adapting, and this is adapting back. Mm-hmm. So I do think it's like a pendulum swinging back and forth.
Well, I think my answer to your question, Mike, would be it already has changed dramatically. And you have to, it depends on how you look at it. I mean, we always try on this show to always engage people and to give them a – I mean, major pro football is 11 and a half minutes of action in essentially a three-hour time slot. Three and a half hours. Now,
that's a good way to put it.
The 11 and a half minutes of action isn't going to change. If you take the time slot from 3 to 4 hours, what are you doing? Mm-hmm. I mean, I know that sometimes I'm watching these games at night and I get up early, obviously, to do the show and so forth. I could go out and I could sit next to you and we can BS at the bar. I'll watch the game with you. Try and sit by yourself at home watching one of these games and not fall asleep.
Great point.
You can't do it.
It's never happened.
I don't watch games live anymore. I will, like Sonny in the Bears game, I taped the game, and an hour after the game started, I started watching it.
Right.
Just so I could fast forward through all the...
That's what my little brother does.
Yeah.
Never watch a commercial if I can help it.
You can pause an entire quarter and catch it by the half easy.
Yeah.
But I mean, with the baseball, if you were to put on two separate screens, I mean, look at, I mean, what was so obsolete about Wrigley Field? It's the only spot for your fanning was your seat, basically, right? Because the games were 2 hours and 15 minutes. You got a beer, or a hot dog, and you watch a little bit, and you're out of there in 2 hours. Why are the Notre Dame seats so uncomfortable as benches? Because college games used to be 2 hours and 45 minutes. Now they're 4 hours. I mean, your ass is just not ready to sit on that seat for 4 hours. You can do it for 2.5. I mean, you've changed the whole venue. And you watch the new stadiums. These guys know this. You go to Philadelphia. You go to Dallas. You go to places. There's all kinds of places to be wandering around, checking out the girls, checking out the guys, whatever you're doing. It has nothing to do with the game. It's a massive social event that happens to have a game going on in the background.
Yep.
It's a totally different world. I mean, Wrigley Field is one of the last of the stadiums. Is designed. There's only one spot for you. And now that they've got the changes, you can bring the kids out and back. They can throw the ball around, come back to the seat. Before that, there was only one spot for you in your seat for 4 hours. You know, all you do is watch. If you were to put, you know, Manny could do this. He's good enough at this. If you were to take a tape of a pitcher this year, except for a few starting pitchers that still get the ball and throw it, if you were to take a tape of certainly a relief pitcher versus 25 years ago. And just watch the. I got my stopwatch out at home because I was bored watching this one game. There was one pitcher, he was 35 to 40 seconds before he would throw the ball. And I'm like,
that's slow.
I've talked about this before. There's a great Sports Illustrated article, I'll try to find it and tweet it out, that came out either a year ago or 2 years ago. And a guy found a 3-2 Cubs versus Pirates game from 1985 and a 3-2 Cubs versus Pirates game from 2015. And they had the same number of hits and the same number of, you know, runs scored. It was at Wrigley Field, and he literally started the tapes at the same time, and he found that the first six innings, the 2015 game was like 7 minutes longer, and it was just a little bit longer commercial breaks, but pretty much the same time. And then from the seventh inning through the ninth inning, the game was like 45 minutes longer.
Yeah, yeah.
Because of there were so many pitching changes, yep. There were so many mound visits, there was a commercial break between each one of them. And it just the seventh, eighth, and ninth inning just took way longer. I mean, it's just different, and it was really interesting. I'll find the article, and I don't know I'll look and see exactly the time length difference, but it was something like that, and it was a really fascinating article.
But some relief pitchers don't want to throw the ball.
That's a big part of it too.
The batter steps out.
Some managers don't want the pitcher to throw the ball.
No, it's an organizational thing too, where they've found that for every second that you hold the ball, you build up a percentage of arm strength between pitches.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
So they found that if, you know, the difference between holding the ball 30 seconds between your next pitch and 25 seconds could be a mile per hour. And so organizations are literally telling their guys to hold it for the maximum amount of time before you pitch, because we know it's a difference between 94 and 93 miles per hour.
Well, I also think there's a psychological effect on the batter waiting those extra couple of seconds, the anticipation and getting ready.
Mm-hmm. Well, the sequence appears to be the pitcher gets the ball back, he wanders around. Then when he gets back up on the mound, then the batter checks out. I thought you weren't supposed to leave the batter's box.
You're not supposed to, yeah.
Then all of a sudden they walk out, you gotta do the thing with your batting gloves. And he goes back in, and only then, you're 20 seconds into it, does the pitcher even look for the sign. It's not like, who's the guy in the Cubs that, if there's nobody on base, his eyes never leave the catcher. He gets the ball back, stares right at him, gets a sign and throws. Hendricks?
Oh, Kyle Hendricks?
Hendricks is a throwback.
Yeah. Mark Burley used to be like that for the White Sox.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, those guys are, they're few and far between now. Other guys are wandering around out there. Anyway, so what, Mike, we're going to talk a little bit about the market here, bud. What do you make of this? After the break, we're going to talk a lot about the market. SP futures up 75 cents. NASDAQ futures up 75 cents. Again, Boeing, the big mover in the Dow, down 460. That's 2 days in a row. That's pushing $17, $18 in 2 days in Boeing, as they've halted or going to halt production of the 737 MAX. Be right back, Stocks and Jocks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices, along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right
now. Hello and welcome to Stocks and Jocks. I'm tonight Mr. Brennan Cronin, Mr. Matt Weber on the board. We have Mr. Who do we have over here? We got Mr. Mike. We got
Mike Hart from Tasty Trade.
Yeah.
your meds?
No, I was going to say Jeff, but then I looked over there and it's not Jeff.
You can call me Beef. That's my nickname.
Beef? Well, yeah, hey, that's a good nickname.
That's
guy.
Easy to remember.
That's a good nickname. Yeah,
makes
I like
it easy.
That. We got Beef. Brandon, you got a nickname?
No, I don't.
You went through your entire... That's a lawyer for you. Good Lord.
Not that I would admit to, anyway.
All right. SP Futures up 50 cents. NASDAQ Futures up 50 cents. We've got Dow down 19. Again, it's all Boeing. Boeing's down 442. The reason why my train of thought was lost. I said we have to get we have to have a show maybe with these two gentlemen, and when all the salaries come out, we'll go through the dispersal of all the teams and see how many teams have half their guys that are making minimums and how many they've spread the money around, and we'll see how they do at the end of the year. Like if there's a difference, it'll be interesting. Actually, don't you think? Dex down 84. That's 0.6%. FTSE down 6. Call that flat. Cacaron down 13.2. News out of Britain is, since Boris Johnson's back in, it resurrects the idea of the no-deal exit. Because they're still not going to be able to get a deal with the people from Belgium, do you guys think? I mean, that was the hang-up all along.
No, I think it's going to be a no-deal Brexit for them.
I think it
he's,
is, too.
He's going to break out on January 31st.
You know what? I think he ought to be honest with you. Nikkei up 113.4%. Shanghai up 38, 1.2%. Hang Seng up 335, 1.2%. Now, remember, these guys were not up yesterday. So a little bit of catch-up there. We have the bonds. 10-year, 1.86. The Bund, minus 0.28. Here we go again. Japan, minus 0.01, Maddie. Are we going to make it to positive? Mike, are we going to make it to positive this week before Christmas, maybe? I don't know. We'll see.
Who knows? We'll see.
We'll see. Oil up 27 cents, 60.48. Highest we've seen it in a while. Brent, 65, 61. Natural gas, 230. Saying up your nose to this winter. Not moving at all. No, like, $3 spike like last year. Mm-hmm. RBOB, 167. So if you're a natural gas trader, you're pretty much sitting on your hands. Gold up a buck and a half. Silver now down 2 cents. $17 exactly. Gold 14.82. Maddie, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
39 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. A couple of issues to report already this morning on a Tuesday. I-55 northbound just before the I-355 Veterans Memorial Tollway. There is a crash blocking the center lane and a vehicle on the left shoulder as well. And that's causing significant delays as you're coming in on the Stevenson out near Bolingbrook, Lamont, in that area, southwestern suburbs. So keep that in mind as you're heading in on I-55. No issues on the Dan Ryan or I-57. Bishop Ford, normal traffic volumes there too. We do have a crash on the south side on Lakeshore Drive, northbound just before 57th Street. This has Marquette to Monroe up to 24 minutes and climbing, so expect some delays on Lakeshore Drive coming in from the south side. Out in the western burbs, there's a crash on the Eisenhower eastbound just before St. Charles Road that's blocking the right lane, and that has I-290 backed up, and I-290's been a mess all morning because of some earlier crashes as well. Edens and Kennedy look normal for this hour, so that's good news. Off the expressways, all kinds of issues in the western suburbs. Roosevelt Road at Fairfield Avenue, there is a crash. Just west of there on Roosevelt at Route 38 at Nickel Way, there is an accident too. And then north of there, up near Carroll Stream and Glen Ellen, that area, North Avenue, there's a crash at Glen Ellen Road. And then Glen Ellen Road at Fullerton, there is a crash as well. And then just northwest of there, Army Trail Road at Bloomingdale Avenue, there is a crash. So all kinds of issues out there this morning. For whatever reason, it's sunny and dry, but cold. So as you're heading out, make sure you bundle up. We'll reach a high of just 34 today with wind chills in the 20s. Right now it's crystal clear and 24 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine with a high of 62 today. Right now it's clear and 41. In sports, Bulls blew a 26-point lead in Oklahoma City last night, losing to the Thunder 109-106. Suns lost to the Blazers 111-110. And Monday Night Football, it was the Saints blowing out the Colts 34-7. Chief.
Vinny, when you got the engagement ring, did you go with the gold band or did you pay up for the platinum?
We did a gold band and then obviously the diamond.
Gold or white gold?
I
thought it was white gold.
No, it's gold. 24 karat regular gold. Or okay. 18 karat, I can't remember.
Regular gold, I like that.
Whatever that's called. Whatever. I don't know, what a surprise. I didn't know what the hell I was doing.
Imagine.
I got all the specs of what she wanted as far as the, you know, the cut and the band and all that crap from her friends without her knowing. And then, went to the lady and I said, this is what I need and here's my price range. And she said, how about this? Which of course was higher than my price range. And I said, can we get a little closer? And she said, how about this? And I go, well, that's fine. And that was it.
Such a deal.
And we both left, probably unhappy, but, there you go.
You aren't, naive enough to think that the friends didn't immediately report to her, do you?
No, they didn't. That was the
really.
Of course not. Why would they do that when they knew? Because
they always talk.
Not to ruin the surprise when you tell them that you're going to propose. They're not going to do that. That would be very
selfish.
Wouldn't
do that. But they would. I'm sure they had wind on something about the ring. They got the ring specs somehow in the conversation.
Well,
not the fact that you were actually buying it.
They always did.
Yeah.
Well, the whole point was to get the ring specs without putting her on to the fact that I'm going to propose.
They did
a good job. She was very surprised.
You did do the great surprise in New York. I congratulate you on that. Even though she's been planning this whole thing, you brought the surprise at the end. I congratulate you.
Thank you. It was a little bit of coordinating on my part, but not too crazy.
Well, it might have been inevitable. You didn't really know what was going on.
Well, I think it was, but there's no turning back. He's got a good one.
Good.
A real good one.
Yeah.
Now, real question here, what exactly do you use palladium for? It's always on the screen. Palladium is making a record run toward $2,000 an ounce. What in God's name do you use palladium for? I should know this, but I do not.
Well, palladium, you know, it's a metal, of course. And when you look at gold, gold can be used in a lot of different things, but really it's a transfer of wealth. That's effectively what gold is. Silver has a little more use industrially. You look at palladium. I believe we use palladium possibly in automobiles. You have the carbon converters, a lot of times you see palladium in that. But palladium, for the most part, is not like gold exactly. There's a lot of industrial uses for palladium.
Did you ever trade it?
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Really? Okay.
It's a very thin market, so at least it was when I traded it. I'm sure there's a little more liquidity in there now. The last time I traded palladium was probably 2 years ago.
Was that one of the New York exchanges, which are all CME now, but... Originally,
yes. They were New York in the...
New York Merck? With the gold guys?
With the gold guys, yes. I believe it was on the COMEX there.
All right, the COMEX.
Yeah.
According to a quick Wikipedia search, more than half the supply of palladium is used in catalytic converters.
Catalytic converters. I couldn't think of the word.
Yeah. And that's why people steal your catalytic converter.
That's right. It's got
pretty
palladium
much,
in it.
Because the palladium's in it. Yeah.
Which convert as much as 90% of the harmful gases in automobile exhaust into less... noxious substances?
They convert carbon monoxide into carbon dioxide.
It's
right?
Interesting when you look for correlations in the market and you look at palladium, when you have one use for something and 50% of the use, I didn't realize it was that high actually, but 50% of the use goes into catalytic converters, it becomes a case where when you're trading, you want to be looking at what's going on with the auto industry. Because of the correlation between the two.
Right.
So if you see something going on in General Motors or Ford, or like in 2008, I guarantee you, I don't know what was going on in the palladium market, but I guarantee you that was one of those markets that was going haywire during that period of time because of the connection to the auto industry.
What is the technology that they use? I'll bet that a converter now uses... a lot less play than they did when they first came out. When did they come out? In 1978 or something? 1982? Somewhere in there. It tastes like almost like maybe an ounce for an entire... When they put the gold dome on Notre Dame, it's like a half a pound of gold or something. I mean, it's like a hundredth of an inch thick. I mean, it's unbelievable mm-hmm. how little you can use to coat this stuff if mm-hmm. these people know what they're doing, and they obviously do. So I got to ask you, Mike. What do you think? I bet if I went back in my stuff here, I go back. I got money supply numbers and inflation numbers going back to the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that I can ever remember. Well, I bet if I find a 10% rise in money supply that 6 months later I find an inflation of like 8%.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, one of the things that I always thought about inflation was you just didn't want inflation. But a couple of years ago when we were looking at the Fed numbers, when we were looking at the returns on the economy, inflation became a big thing. And actually, every month we were looking for where is the inflation. We couldn't figure out why there wasn't inflation in the economy. And actually, for a healthy economy, you want some inflation. You need to have a certain percentage of inflation. I think we keep it around, like, we try and shoot for maybe 2-3% of inflation. But you're absolutely right. I think there's like a disconnect right now with money supply and inflation. You would think just pumping nothing but pure cash into the economy, and I know it's way more complicated than that. I'm just really kind of putting a broad stroke on this, but you put a whole bunch of cash into the economy, it makes economic sense that you're going to eventually cause a tremendous amount of inflation. I know they're trying to keep that in check, and you have to look at the world in general, how, you know, everything's performing. The dollar is actually getting a little bit stronger relative to all those other currencies.
Well, but why would you ever think that it would be even?
As far as even with the pound,
in the 70s,
yeah, sure.
It went into everything with oil because those guys had pricing power. There was places that it didn't affect. Mm-hmm. If it was even, nobody'd care, right?
No one would care, but I think you're right. It's one of those things where, even from a trading perspective, when you have you look at the spread between the two. And we know that spreads have a tendency to converge back to the mean, but they do get out of line, and they can stay out of line for a long time. But eventually, you need to have that healthy balance come back. So whatever that number is, I'm not an economist, so I don't actually watch those two numbers. But my guess is you would want that spread to come back in line. Otherwise, you have a lot of traders placing bets on each side. You know, waiting for the convergence, following the divergence that you see between the two.
Well, what an extreme? And this is a question that actually makes no sense, except that it's an extreme. What do you suppose the GDP growth was in the Weimar Republic?
You know, I think if you told, you could give me any number. You could. It could be.
Yeah. what do you think it is in Venezuela? Where every day the currency drops by 10%.
It's awful.
I mean, at some point, and I'm not saying we're there, and I'm not saying anybody should listen to me, because I certainly don't trade off what I say, but at what point, when you continue to increase the amount of dollars in circulation, is Apple going up, not because Apple's more valuable in relation to other things, but the dollars buying Apple are worth less?
I think we're already seeing that, to be honest with you, Chief.
I think we are, too.
Yeah.
And I don't know, you know, you guys are younger. I don't know why we would ever play. Somebody asked me that last night, one of the guys who works for CBOE, and he's 60-ish. He goes, you know, why would we ever even go anywhere near that alligator again, as horrible as it was last time when it got out of control? And Milton Friedman would say, when you look at the well, I don't really remember the early 50s, you, Brennan, but late 50s, 60s was something you and I at least remember in hindsight, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, but it was a world that was driven by people coming back from the war, a lot of new innovation. I mean, everybody wanted a phone, everybody wanted a washing machine. There was all kinds of...
Everybody wanted color TVs.
Yeah, everybody wanted mm-hmm. color TV. What was the song? Needs a Color TV, but I forgot that song, but you don't want me singing, but there was a little bit of inflation, but you had Your old man probably was getting a 3.5% raise a year.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the price of the house was going up 2% a year. So you had a little bit of asset creep, but not a whole hell of a lot. But between the salary going up and the inflation a little bit by, if your parents bought a house 4 years into it, I'll bet the mortgage was half of one paycheck between them getting the raise.
Yep.
Now your house goes up a little. So it's part of a Nirvana world, but it's all part of this other stuff. It's like if you see a dead body and you say, okay, what does a body do? Well, the heart pumps, the brain thinks. We know what the behind does. And it's like standing above it and go, if we can just get this body pooping again, everything will be okay. No, wait a minute. It's one of 100 things that went into the 60s and early 70s economy that made it work. It wasn't, I mean, if you were to look back at it and say, out of all the things that were happening during the 60s, what was the important one? Brendan, would we ever say 2% inflation? That was like the part that went over the fence last. It had to do with people getting raises, innovation at work, where the guy used to be able to make 10 of these things and now he's making 15. So the company did better and so did he. The economic theories were working.
Back then, actually, yeah. I completely agree. Economic theory made a lot of sense. And we are actually in a time where we know the laws of economics aren't breaking down. We know the laws of economics still hold true. It's just the dynamics have changed and the complexity of the system has gotten to a point where economic theory on the high level 100% addresses this, but on the level of the 50s and 60s, it's hard to compare the two because there's so many more nuances that we're seeing in the economy today. It's like you said, you know, we're watching numbers that I don't think 20 years ago anyone was really looking at, and now they're they're the primary drivers that we're using to place our trades to decide, you know, where we're going to go on the yield curve. Everything's getting the complexity is definitely increasing, and you got to look at where did it all happen. Well, I go back. I just look at a chart of everything that's kind of going on. It seems like right around the 2000, right around kind of that, the internet era, we started to see valuations go off the chart, and we did see, you know, a collapse around 2001 when everything went under.
Right.
But,
oh, yeah.
You know, we immediately went right back up. 2008 happened, and then, you know, it seemed like we were just on the economy was on steroids in a sense because, the enormous package that we went in to try and the bailout or whatever you want to call it.
Well, I think that this is, if I had some time, I think that the economic laws now, what you're seeing is almost are the mirror images of almost the 20s and the Depression.
Mm-hmm.
Not so much the last few years. What you're seeing with the labor supply, it's almost like how much money people used to make in the 20s when you had child labor. Because if you had child labor, you could essentially increase the supply of labor so much you didn't have to pay people because you were able to use 14-year-olds. So when Roosevelt and those guys came in and said, no, you can't have child labor anymore, it was obviously a thing. You don't want your 14-year-old daughter working in a sewing factory, sure. Obviously, or son. But what it really did was now, wait a minute, we took those people off the table.
Yeah,
they're not in the workforce anymore. So in order to get the next 18-year-old, I better pay a cent more than the guy down the block, right. Or I'm not going to get him. So you mess with the supply and the demand. And that's what the companies, maybe not on purpose, have done now by taking stuff overseas.
Definitely, I think that's an extremely fair point. You bring up the idea of changing the supply of workers out there. I think we are going to, start speculating way ahead in the future, but I think we're going to see the same type of shift. I think that's an amazing comparison you just made because we're entering a period of time where we are going to see, and this is going to, in my opinion, be, 5 to 10 years out. I don't think it's that far away. We're going to start seeing jobs replaced by robots, or right. we're going to see a shift in the type of labor that humans perform and the type of labor that can just get taken away by our technology. So I think that we're going to see another shift similar to that.
But some of it is when you ask why the quote economic laws don't seem to be working. You look at how much the labor, the supply has grown because you take people overseas. But now theory would tell you, okay, when the guy overseas starts making some money, they're going to say, hey, I want some dough over here too.
Right.
They become customers, and in the end, it should be good for you. That there should be half a billion Chinese people buying crap from here because now they've got some dough. But because it's a, they in Mexico have their own social problems, the laws don't work there. Mm-hmm. In China, I'm going to say that every company, not every, but a lot of companies, because I tried to do this for somebody. I met somebody at one of the Economic Club of Chicago dinners, Brendan, and the guy says, you know, I need to bring a place. I need to take my business maybe over to China. So, of course, I knew somebody in the Economic Club that was from the Chinese embassy. So I talked to them, and they go, imagine that, me talking to somebody. I talked to them, and they said, oh, well, you bring somebody over, we'll look at the business. We'll have two or three people from China essentially guide you through the process, what province you should be in, make sure where the factory is. You pay these people as, I'll use the term, consultants, insultants, whatever you want to call them, and they'll make sure you get the labor you need. Yeah, I'm sitting here listening to this, and I'm going, this sounds like The Godfather, for God's sake. So essentially, you're paying this guy and his group of thieves or knaves, whatever the hell they are, to keep the labor under his thumb. I mean, there's a reason why people don't strike over there, and it's not because they think strikes are wrong. Same thing in Mexico. Why are people in Mexico making the same $3 an hour they made 15 years ago making Chevys? Because somebody obviously is keeping them under something, right? So that part hasn't worked out. So now all of a sudden you got this whole class in China, which you do, of people that are millionaires. Mm-hmm. Well, how do they become a millionaire? They got paid by people here instead of the people in the factory. Right, it's like paying off the mob or the Teamsters or something. So now all of a sudden their kids are coming over here and going to school. And if you go to the University of Illinois, you're going to find some percentage of people there that are paying top dollar from overseas, competing with our kids, mm-hmm. and the prices of colleges are going up. I mean, this never ends. I mean, it never ends. But if you look at the supply and demand part, okay, wait a minute, we've got labor going someplace, so we're kind of screwing those guys. Right now we're having people coming over here, and we're increasing the supply at our universities, even though we never have any new universities. And oh, by the way, so we're just going to give people loans, and now we got a whole bunch of people that have student loans because they're competing against people overseas. Right. I mean, this becomes like...
Well, and you know, part of it, I think, is the disconnect between fiscal and monetary policy. We have a rapidly changing economic condition in the world, but we're not seeing the necessary laws changing fast enough
right.
to keep up with it. So you mentioned all of these different ways countries are operating, and the right way, in my opinion, to solve some of these problems are to change some of the laws. Thing is, as you said, you have a wealthy class that has a real incentive not to see those laws changed.
Right. Oh, yeah.
So even though we're seeing all of the economic numbers point one direction, the pace of that fiscal or the changing of the laws to reflect it just aren't happening fast enough.
Right. And your theory would be like automobiles. I'm going to say in the 70s, late 70s, didn't the $20 an hour essentially... wage made the middle class because mm-hmm. it's $40,000, right? So that's what people in the auto industry were making in the late 70s. They probably got up to what? 35, 40? And now they're back down into the 25s, right? So mm-hmm. you would think that if the people that were making 20 in those days and a car cost, I'm going to say $4,000, which they did, right, Brennan?
Mm-hmm.
Then all of a sudden, if you fast forward essentially 50 years, or 45 years, if the same guy is still making $25, why the hell does the car cost $31? Where does it go? Where's the other $27? It's certainly not going to him.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at this and you're almost like amazed. How could that be?
Well, and then you know, I know we're running out of time, but you look at where the market stands today. The market's at all-time highs. We're at a place that we haven't seen before as far as valuations of everything.
Right.
But you're right that we're not seeing the middle class really advance as fast as everything else is advancing. So where is all this money going?
Well, and how far can you ride the discontinuity in the society? I mean, it got to a point in 1929. Look what happened there.
Yeah,
I'm not predicting that, but but it's just, I mean, you wonder if we stopped what I consider to be the monetary craziness and we just hung out there for 2 or 3 or 4 years and let people catch up.
Right.
We probably could pull it off, but there doesn't seem to be any hint of that. It's not like the Fed is going to run to 8% and stop there. If the market needs 10% to stay here or 12% or 15%, how high are they willing to go? To some absurd number?
And great question. And you see the Fed today.
We got to hold this for next week, buddy.
Sounds good.
SP futures up too, NASDAQ futures up too. Boeing, big thing up. They're only down 347 now. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI ProDirect. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.